I can't remember if it was fall or winter, but it was definitely cold out. I remember that. My friend and I were walking to class, and we came across this art piece.
It was located in the building where all of our college's writing classes occur, in a very public location.
And then it dawned on me what we were looking at. This isn't just something that's artful anymore. This is now passed from art and now into something that is trying to convey something else.
It showed an explicit scene with genitals and things of that nature.
I mean, you could see the penis in the anus. And if you think it was shocking to just hear that, folks, imagine what it was like to actually see it very large on the wall in this building. When I would speak to my progressive friends and colleagues, I noticed they were talking about how this was very bold and it was something that would affirm and empower the LGBTQ community.
I don't find explicit artwork especially offensive. And I find it, as most things in art, something to engage with and to think about.
It was really intense, and it was quite unsettling.
There is this ideological friction.
But there was nothing to bring people out of their echo chambers and start to have discourse.
It's so easy to forget that the people on the other side of a divisive issue are just that, people. Just remembering that simple fact can feel like a major challenge, and so disagreements can quickly escalate. I'm Dacher Keltner. Welcome to The Science of Happiness. Today we're going to hear from people who disagreed about whether a sexually explicit piece of artwork should be displayed at their university. And we hear from the professor who is the catalyst for bringing them together. We'll also delve into the science behind one of the most important techniques they use, the practice of taking someone else's perspective.
We often dismiss people more than we should, and perspective taking seems to be an important way to reassess the situation and come from a more constructive place where people are more willing to engage with others.
More after this break. Hi, it's Dacher. If you're like me, you probably have a wide variety of interests when it comes to your podcast listening. A little psychology here, a little history there, which is why I want to recommend a show perfect for those with eclectic tastes. Freakonomics Radio has more than 10 years and 500 episodes worth of answers to your biggest questions. But don't be fooled, it's not just for economists and business experts. Every week, Stephen Dubner dives into the hidden side of everything. With the help of guests, including CEOs, artists, and Nobel laureates, he breaks down all sorts of things, like how we choose the people we marry, and why using swear words might be more important than you think. So don't miss out. Follow Freakonomics Radio right now, wherever you get your podcasts. The Science of Happiness is proudly brought to you by the John Templeton Foundation, funding research and catalyzing conversations that inspire people with awe and wonder. Discover the latest findings in neuroscience, cosmology, and the origins of life at templeton.org. Welcome back to The Science of Happiness. I'm Dacher Keltner. Today, we're exploring how we can address divisive issues in ways that create understanding and bridge differences rather than drive people apart. Our guests are Mark Urista, a professor of communication at Lynn Benton Community College in Oregon, and two of his former students there, Anthony Lusardi and Stephen Olson. Anthony and Stephen fell on opposite sides of a campus controversy, and Mark helped create a bridge between them. Here was the issue. A graphic work of art depicting two men having sex was hung in a central location on their campus. Some students, like Anthony, were really upset by it and wanted to take it down. Others, like Stephen, were opposed to the idea of censoring art. Mark, Anthony, and Stephen, thanks for joining us on The Science of Happiness.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much.
So, Mark, the art department decides to showcase this work of art, and the location they put it in, it's a hallway where every student in a writing class has to walk through to get to class. What was the atmosphere like on campus when that happened?
So I think it's really important to emphasize the location of Lynn Benton Community College. We're in about 70 to 80 miles south of Portland, Oregon. And the most defining feature in terms of this story is that we serve two counties. I often refer to Lynn Benton Community College as Red County, Blue County Community College. And as you can imagine, this artwork exhibit created quite the controversy on our campus. What I was noticing, though, amongst my colleagues and amongst students were that people were speaking openly about the artwork in their own echo chambers. But there was nothing to bring people out of their echo chambers and start to have discourse about the various layers and dimensions and perceptions that people had of this artwork.
Yeah. Anthony, how about you? How did you react to the art when you first saw it?
I thought to myself, okay, how is this allowed here in the first place? And I didn't want to share that opinion immediately. I thought to myself, okay, if I share this, I'm obviously a prude, or I don't understand how the progression of things work in this collegiate environment. So I kind of kept my mouth shut, but I was still very shocked inside, and I still felt like there was something I had to say, but I just didn't want to say it.
Stephen, how about you? How do you initially react to the art when you first saw it?
For me personally, I wasn't immediately off-put by it, but it did make me think, like, you know, given the culture of our campus, I knew, like, right off the bat, this is not going to go very well.
Mark had pulled my friend and I aside, and he said, hey, what do you guys think? What's this all about? And he says, we should make this a debate. We should make this in part of our class. You guys should do this as a project.
We flip a coin right before the debate occurs in class to decide who argues in the affirmative and who argues in the negative. Anthony and his friend Brandon both had to prepare arguments for both sides of the proposition.
I was gathering some arguments or some perspectives. I guess that's a better word. Arguments is not exactly what we were looking for. We were just looking for perspectives from people. Why should we have this here? Why should we not have it here based on these values? And we kind of gathered some conversation beforehand. A lot of the sentiment I got was, I'm so glad this is happening. And I can't wait to be there. It wasn't so lonely. You know, I felt like we were the pioneers and there was no one else that was going to really be interested in this, but it was not that at all. And that feeling dissipated so quickly when I was engaging with these perspectives. A lot of them would share in a very heartfelt way without all of the tropes and from whatever party you're from. It came down to the personal level. I feel this.
There was a lot of perspective taking. It seemed like all the students who participated genuinely wanted to understand the thoughts of people who clearly disagreed with them on this controversy. I think that's a key principle for doing bridging work, is you have to sincerely want to understand more than you want to persuade.
Having Anthony and everybody there with the intention of, like, we're not here to point fingers and throw stones. We're just here to really speak to the value of this, right? Of having the artwork up, or explain the perspective of somebody who wouldn't want it up, right?
You start to get those nuances and the thinking happening and the conversation occurring.
You're discussing a conversation from multiple viewpoints without the idea that something has to necessarily be done in that moment. It builds up the kind of richness, or it provides, like, the multiple perspectives from, you know, either side that gives that topic more roundedness. I came into university and coming into higher education after my service in the military. And interestingly enough, the place I've had the most conversations that are about controversial topics from multiple perspectives is the military. For example, you know, when I left Southern Oregon, where I grew up, you know, I really hadn't interacted with anybody of many different races, political spectrums, creeds. And when I started serving with other people, you know, I had medics who were gay. I had machine gunners who were black from the Deep South. Because there's that intimacy between all of us, like, none of us feel afraid to state what we think, right, and have that conversation. So it was kind of like a reminiscing feeling with students of, like, this is kind of what that multiple perspective kind of togetherness looks like, right? That, you know, we can walk away from a conversation about something heated and have an appreciation of the other side ultimately. So it was really cool to see that kind of start to get fostered and those wheels start to turn.
I think that I was very nervous, I'm not gonna lie. One of the biggest fears I had was being categorized or pigeonholed as, you're a homophobe, or you don't understand art, or you don't know what you're talking about, you're just coming from this take it all down perspective. And I think that I was scared of that when I went into it. I started off with, let's take it down, and not really encourage that and foster that discussion that artwork should always be pushing. So I think that was my personal moral shift, that I had taken from that debate, but that was only available to me after I had gone through and listened and put myself in the other shoes.
Anthony, one of the things that you seem to have expressed, and it's interesting, is just almost a liberating quality to having this debate of allowing people to speak their minds when they felt like they couldn't. And I'm curious what it felt like for you.
It's kind of like this elation after you're done and you feel like this weight off your shoulders, you're done with it, and then you've expressed everything. So at first it was sort of disappointing, to be honest. Like I thought I would have this with every friend I would have. And it turns out that's not the fact, because not everyone wants it, A. And, you know, maybe you're not ready for it. You know, you have some stuff you need to address. So it's not going to always be this perfectly set up argument from both sides. But the true treasure from that is that you've now been able to carry a conversation and in a structured and empathetic way and carry that to wherever you can guide others.
Yeah.
The reason to do it is the opportunity it creates, you know, in your life to do and to be more, right? You know, interact with people who are outside of your normal sphere, right? You know, interact with people in agriculture, interact with people in sports, you know, expose yourself to more because it adds a little bit more to you every time, right? Where if you don't, you're really just taking away from yourself. If I would have just stayed Sergeant Olson, I wouldn't be the person I am now. And I think that evolution is important for everybody.
We definitely need it. Well, Stephen, Anthony, and Mark, thank you so much for the bold conversations you guys created for your campus and giving us some lessons about perspective taking of the people who are different from us and all the underlying similarities there are. So thanks so much for being here.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much.
What really strikes me about Stephen and Anthony's story is that it's such a rare outcome in recent history where politics has gotten so contentious.
We tend to view others with opposing moral leanings as almost alien. We dislike and we distrust them. We tend to think they're immoral. So you can see all these negative stereotypes abounding and discrimination, just assumptions about the other side.
More on the science of how to overcome these tendencies up next. Welcome back to The Science of Happiness. I'm Dacher Keltner. We've been talking about bridging differences and how two community college students and their professor did the seemingly impossible. They had a genuine civil discourse about a really divisive issue. A lot of us find it difficult to engage with someone whose worldview is really different from our own.
Contact between different people and different groups is actually crucial for overcoming things like prejudice, stereotyping, and discrimination.
But it's kind of a catch-22.
We often avoid the very people that would help us overcome these stereotypes and truly connect with each other.
Cynthia Wang's studies reveal how we might do that, how to build trust across divides. She's a clinical psychology professor at Northwestern University. Cynthia wanted to find a way to get people over that hump. So she ran a study in Singapore focused on a local youth demographic called Abang.
So Abangs in Singapore are stereotyped to be like hooligans, uncivilized, uneducated, and even at times violent.
She brought 116 college students into her lab and one by one showed them a picture of an Abang.
It was a young man with spiky hair and tattoos. And then we asked them to write an essay about him.
Each person got different writing instructions. Some were told to write the essay as objectively as possible, and some were told to write an essay about a day in the man's life from his perspective.
Looking at the world through his eyes and walking through the world in his shoes.
Another group was instructed to write an essay about the man, but to really try to suppress any stereotypes they might have about him.
And after people were done, we told them they were about to meet the person in the photograph they had just seen.
They were led to an empty room with 8 chairs in it.
And on that first chair, there was a motorcycle helmet, typically worn by Abangs. So it implied that this is where the man was sitting. And we said, hey, he must have stepped out briefly and then told participants to take a seat and wait for him to come back. And once the participant had taken their seats, we carefully took note of exactly where they sat.
Some participants sat in a chair right next to the motorcycle helmet, while others sat a little bit further away.
And the big question is, did anything we did manage to affect what happened and encourage people to break through their natural inclination to avoid contact with somebody different from them? Perspective takers sat the closest to our imaginary participant.
But the people who were told to try to suppress any stereotypes they had about the Ah Bang actually sat the farthest away.
When we actually try to suppress our thoughts about something, they often become even more ingrained in our minds. And I like to bring up this example, and I want all of the people listening right now not to think of a white elephant. And of course, immediately what pops into our head? Well, a white elephant, and you really cannot get it out of your heads, right? So I think these results really show the importance of taking the perspective of people who are part of these negatively stereotyped groups or who you might be trying to avoid, because it really draws you closer to them. In this time of disconnection, whether it's driven by the politics or, you know, in the last couple of years, I know for me, the disconnection driven by COVID-19, right? Trying to take the perspective of others might be one step in the right direction to start rebuilding trust and starting to overcome the perceived differences that we have.
On our next episode, we're joined by Amy Schneider, the most successful woman to ever compete on Jeopardy. We hear how a mindfulness exercise helped her find poise in the face of extreme competition.
I was realizing that there's, you know, a good chance that I would lose my first game. 2 out of 3 people do. But, like, don't let the fear of failing distract you from it. Like, enjoy it. If it is only this one episode, don't spend it being miserable and afraid. Let it be what it is.
I'm Dacher Keltner. Thanks for joining us on The Science of Happiness. You can find more resources for Bridging Differences in our show notes and also at bridgingdifferences.org. Email us at happinesspod@berkeley.edu or use the hashtag happinesspod. We love hearing what you think about our happiness practices and how these stories impact you. Today's episode was supported by a grant from the Arthur Vining Davis Foundation as part of the Greater Good Science Center's Bridging Differences Initiative. Our executive producer of audio, Shuka Kalantari. Our producer is Haley Gray. Sound designer is Jenny Cataldo of Accompany Studios. And our associate producer is Zhe Wu. Our editor-in-chief is Jason Marsh. The Science of Happiness is a co-production of UC Berkeley's Greater Good Science Center and PRX. Support for The Science of Happiness comes from Odoo. What is Odoo? Well, Odoo is the only software your business will ever need. Featuring a suite of integrated business applications, Odoo connects your business operations together so you can get more done in less time. Odoo has apps for everything: CRM, accounting, sales, HR, inventory, marketing, manufacturing, you name it, Odoo's got it. To learn more, visit odoo.com/happiness. That's odoo.com/happiness.